My reasons for staying away both have fairly recent birth certificates. But don't worry, I am not here to talk about my children. When I received the brochure in the mail about this year's symposium, it was like smelling peach cobbler cooking after you've just eaten way too much fried chicken and butter beans and mashed potatoes and gravy, and I'm sure you can all relate to that at this point. I looked around at everything else on my plate, and I just thought I just didn't have room for another bite. So I thought, well, I'll just save room next year. I'll go next year. But then I got 3 phone calls from John T. in as many days, and I thought I'd better call him back. And he told me that one of his speakers had fallen ill and asked if I would please come and talk about sweet potatoes in her place. And you all know how hard it is to tell him no. Plus, he is one of the precious few people who usually laughs at my jokes, and I really like that in a person. So I couldn't resist. And I must say that this has been as satisfying as any peach cobbler I have ever tasted. For those of you who are looking forward to hearing Sarah Belt King, I hope that I can be as informative and entertaining as she. I'm so sorry that she's ill, and I know that you all join me in sending her our best wishes and hopes that she gets better very soon. I'm not an intellect or an academic or an historian, but I am someone who loves to eat as much as I love to talk. As such, I have spent a great deal of time learning to cook so that I can always have good food, and I have become a writer so that I can talk without interruptions. As self-indulgent as that is, it is not all fun and games. Sometimes I am called to a noble purpose, and today I am here to speak of one of the most versatile, nutritious, and flavorful vegetables in the world, the sweet potato. But since this year's theme is from farm to table, let me begin by telling you that I come from an agrarian family in Adams County, Mississippi. There were a long line of cattle farmers. In the West, they're called ranchers. In Natchez, they're called farmers, cattle farmers. Most of the land came into my mother's father's family before Mississippi became a state, and they've been farming it ever since. It was not a huge plantation like some of those that you read about in Natchez. It has remained small. I don't know what that says about my family and their sense of progress, but they have maintained it. They have survived and enjoyed the peaks and valleys of wealth and poverty, but always admired and cared for their land. And it gave back, not only to the landowner. Well, I mean, it gave a little back. Those of you who are farmers know that profits are not always a part of the equation. There's an old story that my great uncle used to tell about a guy selling hammers on the street corner out of a barrel for 10 cents. A fellow walked up and said, "That's a good price on hammers." He said, "Yeah, I buy them for a quarter and I sell them for a dime." Now the guy said, "Man, you can't make any money like that." He said, "Yeah, I know, but it beats farming." Anyway, the land gave a little back to the landowner and provided for his extended family and the extended family of those who worked on the farm and in the house. If nothing else, we all had meat. We all had vegetables. It wasn't just the people who worked on the farm and those who were related to us. My great-grandmother had a nice habit of adopting people who might need a roof over their heads or a warm plate of food or a college education. And any number of these relatives and friends showed up with regularity at our dinner table, particularly during the holidays or sweet potato weather. One such gathering took place at my great Aunt Hattie's house. We call her sister. Let me add that my family, like many families that are based along the Mississippi River, liked to take an occasional drink. And sister liked it more than occasionally. While she drank more than most of us, she was very creative, very smart. It is my opinion that she was bored with the rest of us and drank to entertain herself. But being very creative, and she was also a very marvelous cook. Turned out elaborate and sophisticated cakes and desserts. It was at her table that I first tasted sweet potatoes. I was a child, and It was Thanksgiving. They were whipped up with butter and eggs and brown sugar and topped with pecans and nutmeg and laced with a good bit of bourbon. That began my love affair with sweet potatoes and the old tartar. Sweet potatoes were usually given the same Baroque treatment in my mother's kitchen. Just about anything will taste good with plenty of butter and sugar and bourbon, except maybe pig lips. To uncover the true pleasures of the sweet potato, though, we have to wade our way through its confusing history and linguistic briar patch. Let me get a little water before I continue. The sweet potato was grown for centuries by the Incas of Peru and the Mayas of Central America. It was called casiri and was described in the records of Columbus's fourth voyage to taste not unlike chestnuts. Later in 1540, De Soto found sweet potatoes in Native American gardens in what is now called Louisiana. Haitians call them batatas. One Portuguese navigator wrote, "The root which is called by the Indians of Hispaniola batata is named Inyami at St. Thomas off the coast of Africa, and is one of the most essential articles of their food." This is perhaps the first time someone confused the American-based sweet potato with the African yam. But more about that later. Not only did the Spanish explorers bring the sweet potato back to Spain, it is also believed that they took the sweet potato to the Philippines and the East Indies, after which Portuguese voyagers carried it to India and China. Being a tropical plant, sweet potatoes took happily to the warm growing conditions of Spain, and the Spanish relished them. Soon, they were exporting them to England, where spiced sweet potato pies were included in the vast and rich table of Henry VIII, and batata eventually became potato. So when they speak of potatoes, they're speaking of sweet potatoes. The sweet potato gained popularity during the Renaissance, perhaps because the elite had such a sweet tooth. Even their meat dishes were sweetened with fruits, sometimes to cover the rancidity of the meat. But also for a more curious reason. In Shakespeare's day, for instance, they were sold in crystallized slices as an aphrodisiac. In The Merry Wives of Windsor, at the end of the play, in a long-awaited meeting with Mistress Ford, Falstaff exclaims, "Let the sky rain potatoes. Let it thunder the platoon of green sleeves, hailing kissing comfits and snow eringoes." Eringoes, or candied sea holly, was another aphrodisiac of time. So while Falstaff may have been portly, he was not necessarily hungry when he was talking about potatoes. Just how and why the sweet potato was given these attributes is a mystery. Perhaps it says something about the Inca and Maya virility. Or maybe the Spanish explorers were quite clever in their marketing. that might even get some fool to eat pig lips. The French, never to be outdone in the kitchen or the boudoir, planted them at the request of Louis XV. They were popular in France for a while, and it died down. Then about 30 years later, the Empress Josephine, who was a Creole from Martinique, introduced them into the gardens of Malmaison. Soon the smell of sweet potatoes was wafting through the salons of Paris, where courtiers served them at intimate dinners to stimulate the ardor of their lovers. Such an important indulgence couldn't have been left behind, and it is thought that perhaps not only did the sweet potato creep up from Central America as a vine, but it was introduced to the southern colonies by lusty Europeans. To further confuse things, I'd like to point out that sweet potatoes are not really potatoes. While potatoes are members of the nightshade family, which is a poisonous plant, and it was much maligned in Europe until around the 18th century, sweet potatoes are in the morning glory clan. Potatoes are a tuber, sweet potatoes are a root, and true yams are something altogether different. Yams are indigenous to West Africa and are considered a sacred plant there. It doesn't propagate from seeds. A new yam sprouts from an old yam, symbolizing the life, birth, and death cycle. And I believe it's pronounced Nyam. It means in West Africa, it is the verb to eat. When African slaves were brought to toil in the American fields and kitchens, they found none of their beloved yams growing naturally, but they did substitute sweet potatoes. So a yam by any other name would taste as sweet, or really sweeter. Since the yam has been such an important food to Africans, it was extremely popular in the early American kitchen. Thus began the American, it was sort of a European African fusion cooking of the American sweet potato slash yam. To further perplex the American public, while a true yam is not as sweet as a real sweet potato, the sweetest variety of a sweet potato is a Louisiana yam. In the 1930s, horticulturalists at LSU developed a sweet potato that was high in nutrition and sugars without the strings found in other sweet potatoes. It had a distinct advantage of staying moist when baked. So to differentiate their new variety, they began marketing it as a yam, or probably a better pronunciation, and Louisiana A's are flat, and they say yam. So it's really not as ugly a word as I would say yam or yam. So anyway, that forever intermingled the terms and bewildered all consumers. But most shoppers can ignore all of this, since the true African yams are hard to find in markets, and mostly what you see in the grocery store or the farmer's market will be the Louisiana yam or a sweet potato named Beauregard. Before the yam or sweet potato makes it from the farm to your table, it must be cured. Their inherent moistness makes them prone to rot. To avoid spoilage, farmers once cured them in huts where they were stacked to be dried for several days by the smoke or heat from a wood fire, or they were laid out to dry by the wind and the sun and then placed in barrels or buried and covered with hay to be stored and dried out. Today, this process takes place in giant industrial kilns where potatoes are held for 5 days with relatively high humidity. As they cure, the white sap is dried out and somewhat ironically produces a creamier sweet potato. And a long, low heating converts some of the starch to sugar so they are sweeter. Sweet potatoes are normally harvested in October and cured so that they are at their best at Thanksgiving. When shopping for sweet potatoes, you should look for those that are heavy for their size and are very hard, hard as rocks, with no soft spots. Now, they can have rough spots, a smooth skin is not necessarily a sign of quality. When you get them home, you refrigerate them, and you put them in a well-ventilated... you don't ever refrigerate them. To further confuse you, you don't ever refrigerate, and you put them in a well-ventilated spot, and they'll keep there for about a week. So finally, we are in our kitchens with the sweet potato. And that's where my real love affair with the sweet potato begins. A southern purist will tell you that there is no better cold weather lunch than a baked sweet potato. You just scrub it and pop it into a 450 degree oven for about an hour. Then when it's real soft, you take it out and split it and put a dollop of butter on it, salt and pepper it, and eat it while it's still steaming hot with a big glass of cold milk. But a creative cook can tell you 100 different ways to enjoy this versatile vegetable with or without a little bourbon. Excuse me. Oops. Have a little more water. I'm going to tell you some of my favorite ways to prepare and eat sweet potatoes. And to start with appetizers, one of my favorites is called, what I call sweet potato aioli. Y'all know that aioli is sort of a garlicky mayonnaise made in France. Well, I roast sweet potatoes and whole heads of garlic at the same time in the same 450 oven. And then I guess the ratio is like one pod of garlic to one sweet potato. It depends on how sweet the garlic gets, how sweet the sweet potato is to begin with, and how strong the garlic might taste. But anyway, take one pot of garlic to one sweet potato, you put it in the food processor, and you turn it on, and as it's going, you add enough melted butter or good olive oil to make a very creamy mixture. and you serve that. You salt and pepper it, maybe put a little hot pepper in there. You serve that on good pumpernickel bread. It's a wonderful spread. A healthier version, by the way, my first book was called How to Eat Like a Southerner and Live to Tell the Tale, and it's healthy versions of traditional Southern foods. It's out of print now, but just to tease you a little bit or confuse you more. I do come up with some other methods of making things creamy, and I found that a ripe peach has a certain creaminess if it is pureed. It can have a tacky quality almost. So if you puree a ripe peach with the baked sweet potatoes, you'll have a nice acidity and a nice creaminess and moisture. And you can put some salt and maybe a little Tabasco in there too. Both of those mixtures, by the way, make very good mashed sweet potato side dishes if you serve them hot. Another appetizer that I love to make and serve are sweet potato chips. You have to be careful when you're frying sweet potatoes because they have so much sugar, and they're tricky. You can't get them too thick or too thin. Too thin, they'll just disintegrate and go like this. Too thick, they'll be tough. So I cut them about the thickness of a quarter. That's pretty much a good guide. And if fry them, steep fat fry them at 365. And while they're still hot, of course, you drain them and put a little salt and cayenne pepper and nutmeg if you like. Sometimes ground thyme is good on whatever you prefer. Sweet potatoes are so versatile that that sweetness, that rich undertone of flavor, marries well with a variety of different flavors. By the way, I've also made for hors d'oeuvre little bite-sized tartlets that are made with, if you take a basic tartlet dough, put some ground pecans in it, maybe a few spices, and then spice up your puree any way you like, but stuff that in and bake them. Those are particularly good with bourbon. Moving on to soups, a baked potato puree thin with a little chicken stock or ham stock makes a great soup base. You can add heavy cream to enrich it or sour cream or yogurt. Again, spice it with something that you're familiar with to begin with. You might want to try a little cinnamon or nutmeg or allspice. Or instead of that, a fresh sprig of something like rosemary or thyme. Rosemary is particularly good with sweet potatoes. Or you could think of Indian spices such as curry or Asian flavors like the sweet, salty, hot Nuoc Cham of Vietnam. Also, one pureed sweet potato is a great way to thicken the soup. It doesn't have quite the mealy quality of a regular Irish potato. So it's a little creamier, and it has a much richer flavor. So if you have, for instance, a carrot soup and you want it to be thicker, you don't want to add cream to it, add some sweet potato puree, and you'll have a nice thicker soup. A great accompaniment to roast pork is julienne stir-fried sweet potatoes. They stay a little bit crisp. They're tiny little matchsticks. You just throw them in a skillet of hot oil and toss them around with the seasonings you happen to have on hand. You can also julienne apples or pears or red onions, and that's good in there too. We can talk about how to cook sweet potatoes all day long, and I'm getting kind of hungry. You can grill sweet potatoes if you parboil them first and then slice them, and then you paint them with your favorite glaze, such as maybe a honey mustard or a reduced soy sauce with ginger put down in it. You put them over the coals and then grill them briefly. If you like roasted potatoes, this is an excellent recipe from my friend Marilyn Harris from Cincinnati. She says to cube them, toss them with good olive oil and finely chopped rosemary, and then pop them in a 500-degree oven until they're dark brown and soft on the inside, and they're you just think you've died and gone to heaven. And speaking of heaven, let's not forget about desserts. Pureed sweet potatoes can be added to cheesecakes, to bread puddings, to custards. It makes a wonderful filling for a cake if you just bake them Always, I always bake sweet potatoes before I puree it and use it, because when you bake it, it caramelizes the sugars and it doesn't add any unwanted moisture. It makes it a creamier texture. Boiling them before they puree them, it makes them too watery to me, and it doesn't intensify the flavors enough. You take that sweet potato puree, and then in another pot, you make an orange curd or lemon curd, and then combine the two. It's a marvelous filling for a cake. And I make sweet potato cake instead of carrot cake. And that's a great dessert for Thanksgiving. Even the plainest of southern desserts, the sweet potato pie, can be lifted to new heights if you take a regular sweet potato pie recipe and fold in egg whites into the filling and then bake it. It'll be like a chiffon pie, and then you put a little meringue on top. It's marvelous. And I make the crust, I put extra brown sugar and spices in the graham cracker crust for that. It's great. Now, I'm going to tell you another reason why I love sweet potatoes, and that's because they're good for you. When God and LSU made the sweet potato that we eat today, they made it just about nutritionally perfect. It's a good source of fiber. It is fat and cholesterol free. It's low in sodium. It's easy to cook. And it's a treasure trove of vitamin A and beta carotene. It would take 23 cups of broccoli to provide as much beta carotene as one cup of sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes also contain significant amounts of vitamin C, vitamin E, proteins, carbohydrates, iron, and calcium. And most good sources of vitamin E are very high in fat, so sweet potatoes are not. And I recommend that you eat them a lot. Now that we've covered the sweet potato as food, I'd like to put my two cents in about the word sweet potato. I prefer it to the word yam. And I don't mean the beautiful flat A of the West African word, or that wonderful Louisiana yam. I don't blame them for hanging on to that and using it. Yam is gorgeous. I mean, to me, the word sweet potato, it has a natural music to it. It has a beautiful sound and rhythm that yam just doesn't have. I mean, have you ever heard of a yam queen? And I have personally known a dachshund named Sweet Potato. And believe me, his name was his best attribute. I've never heard of a dog named Yam. But I digress. I must be getting hungry. And my watch says it's about dinner time. So let's go over to the grove and let the sky rain potatoes.
Minutes for questions.
Sure.
Yes.
You mentioned the aphrodisiac quality of sweet potatoes.
You
didn't mention their hormonal benefits.
I don't know about their hormonal.
Could you please repeat the question so we can capture it?
This lady said that I mentioned the aphrodisiac qualities, but it's not the hormonal benefits. So maybe you can tell us about that. Hormonal is a nice word for aphrodisiac. Thank you.
I have a statement to make and then a question.
Okay.
You never heard of jambalaya?
Is it a shed?
Well, it's a thing, and usually a small town gets together. Many of them are cooperative, and they build a house, and they cure the But also, I want to ask you, do you always have to cure them? It seems that my mother, she liked cured potatoes for most things, but for a special sweet potato pudding that you know, is the best argument I know for the existence of God. She used what she called green potatoes. She couldn't make it out of cured potatoes. You know anything about that?
I don't. From everything I've read, they are better cured, but I don't know what qualities it would have to make a better pudding if it weren't.
She insisted on green potatoes could make that particular dish open.
And they were green because they were fresh, right?
Green because they hadn't been thrown to the tree.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just a comment on the aphrodisiac quality. The study of potatoes from Central America, particularly Mexico, by Carl Gerasi, who at the time was in California Berkeley, led to the development of hormonal replacements for women in what is now known as estrogen replacement therapy. But before that, it led to the development of the birth control pill post-World War II. So I'm not sure it's exactly the same botanical variety as Louisiana found, but the sweet potato was the source of the basic chemical structure that later became a birth control pill, as well as synthetic. Read Syntex as a company and an entire industry.
Wow, thank God for the sweet potato. Well, now for years they did, especially during the 50s and 60s. The Louisiana yam was used like that, and that's one way the vernacular spreads so throughout the country because we had canned yams.
But and, was it mashed? I'm thinking, you know, I know yeah. about sliced and
chopped. Uh huh. But mashed? I don't know. I'm not sure why. We don't have a puree of sweet potatoes. I don't know unless it perhaps doesn't keep as well like that. I understand that the reason why they floated in that heavy syrup is because that preserves them, you know, the chunks are preserved like that. So maybe it's not as easy. It probably doesn't have the shelf life necessary. That would be my assumption.
Bruce Foods has those products available
right now. Bruce Foods has mashed sweet potatoes?
I'm just going to make an unscientific observation. I'm pretty sure it wasn't LSU that had anything to do with the birth control. We didn't have birth control in South Louisiana.
This lady is from South Louisiana. She has a question. Yes, sir.
The low sugar on the sweet potato they're talking about is a white sweet potato that's coming out of Mississippi, which I'm trying to get. Good for people with diabetes and low sugar. As far as Oregon, I have something for our guest, for our host last night, so I'm going to give us a break on this one. We have time for one more question. Mike Corbin.
Courtney, there's a restaurant in Edison that used to serve
about sweet potato biscuits or why they stopped serving them? sweet potato biscuits I have made twice, and I love them. I just don't have a habit of making them. It's just sort of a regular biscuit dough with sweet potato puree put in there, and it just, I don't know how to describe it, except you can't work it at all, like you can't work other biscuits, and they are a warm, beautiful orange color and have a nice sweet flavor to them.
I was just going to add, there's a new sweet potato pancake mix and biscuit mix that's coming out of Bruce Foods in Louisiana. They're using the trimmings from sweet potatoes that they're putting in a can, mash, chunky, whatever, to make these products. They were actually developed by a couple out in Texas who had been breakfast and started using them. And they had them for their restaurant. And there are two new products that are out that are approved for school lunch and food service. And they've got American Heart Association. And they're really fun, great